to startuprad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Hey guys, this is Joe from startuprad.io, and pretty uncommon introduction because this is part two of my interview with Detlef Riesner, co-founder of Kiagen, first startup to ever list from Germany at Nasdaq in 1996, and now a constituent of Germany's lead index, DAX 40. I'm now at the point where I review this content, and actually, I have to say it's a little bit long for just one sitting, one piece. That's why we cut this into two pieces. If you haven't heard the other piece one, please go there and start there. Now, enjoy part two.
Yeah, I think there are a few more examples who really got trashed during the burst of the dot-com bubble, and many came back really strong, for example, Amazon and so on and so forth. Jumping a few years into the future, can you guide us through the decisions you had going, becoming a member of DAX? How did this work? And at the time you were the head of the supervisory board, what were your thoughts about going to become a member of the iconic DAX, Germany's most important stock index?
I have to agree and have to admit that was after the time I was chairman of the board. Mm-hmm. I was still at the advisory board, the scientific advisory board, but and I stepped back from the chairmanship of the supervisory because we had a younger, very well known member of the advisory board. I think he could take over, but he will take over only if we offer it to him right now. So that was the situation, and therefore I think better the CEO asked me after, why don't you stay a year longer or 2 years? No, I say now is a good time that he can take over. Unfortunately, he left 2 years later because he got the offer from ThyssenKrupp and all these companies, bigger boards, But with sleepless nights, I would say. Kiagen, he had no sleepless nights,
I see. Okay.
But I have to say, when from the time of the IPO to today, I think the company, I did not calculate it exactly, must have grown by a factor of five or so. Mm-hmm. And then when we came close, then we reached really a time where it was close to DAX. Mm-hmm. And DAX, of course, depends how many shares are treated. Not when you have a family who owns 80% of the shares, you can never go to the DAX because there is no business on the stock market. Mm-hmm. But we had a very separated, very divided ownership, mm-hmm. And there was a lot of treatment, a lot of dealing with the chairman, mm-hmm. with the stocks, and so this came in close to it. And then the DAX was extended from DAX 30 to DAX 40, mm-hmm. And therefore they had to except new companies, and Kiagen was fortunately among the new companies which fit into the scale of DAX 40.
I see. What you're referring to mostly is the so-called free float, meaning how many stocks are traded on a regular basis and not held.
Mm-hmm. You say the right word,
exactly. Reflecting on your journey to become a global leader in molecular diagnostics, what core values and strategy were pivotal in sustaining its growth and innovation?
I think there were two tendencies, I can say. First, mm-hmm. of course, they said, we concentrate our diagnostics on nucleic acid diagnostics. Mm-hmm. That means virus detection, but also genetic diseases, yeah, and then particularly later genetic modifications which are responsive to pharmaceuticals or non-responsive. For example, that such an oncological medicament like Avastin is good for some people, but bad for other people. And Qiagen could then deliver the tests, the genetic tests, to tell these people will suffer from it and these people will have enormous advantages from it. And those tests, and so they developed the tests step by step, yeah? From the beginning, clear tests, for example, viral detection, and then to mutations which are close to pharmaceutical applications, but of course then also to veterinary tests and to tests from the Gerichtsmedizin. What's Gerichtsmedizin? And that means extremely sensitive tests. Tests made from a hair, yeah? Mm-hmm. And this Qiagen could develop. And we had done on this in my institute many years ago, never knowing that it was going to the court, that it had been used by the court later, by court medicine, yeah? And those things, very sensitive tests. Gerichtsmedizin was a new thing, veterinary medicine, but the main thing is, of course, a human diagnostic, yeah? Mm-hmm. And but then on also, for example, latent diseases, diseases you don't see, but you have already in your body. This is particular pneumonia, yeah? Mm-hmm. They developed a test for that. So step by step, new tests. I don't know how many hundred tests they can offer. Mm-hmm. And that was a critical decision that we had to develop an automat, an instrument, a diagnostic instrument. I can remember in the late 90s, after, of course, the IPO, we discussed for months or even 2 years, should we develop an instrument, then we go again to a new direction? Or is that too risky? Yeah, do we have to invest too much money? And Qiagen invested a lot of money, and it took, I think, several years before they had revenues from the instrument. Yeah, but then finally we thought it fits together. We have the kits and we deliver the instruments. But the kids are also running also on other instruments, but we can offer both. So, and it was, yeah, from then on, that was a new step in growing the company.
I see. We'll be back after a short ad break. Thank you for taking so much time with us. We may add to our audience that we're now already more than an hour in our recording session here. I would like to talk a little bit about your role as a business angel.
Let me put one way, the diagnostic, the expression is forensic diagnostic.
Forensic diagnostics, yes. Great. I want to put a little emphasis on your role as a business angel investor now, because we met at the Business Angel Day. Transitioning into business angel, what key factors do you consider when you're evaluating potential biotech startups for investments?
I think I evaluate the same qualities as I described for you when we started Qiagen, yeah? Good idea. And the character of the scientists or of the startup people, yeah, that is the main point. Not so much when they promise you how much money they will earn on the market. When they are on the market, everything has changed anyway, yeah. And when they think too early on the market, that means it's not really innovative. So it is they think already on the market. So in real innovation is without a market. You have to develop the market. There is no market. Yeah. And that is only always when an investor is asked, now, then give me an estimation about your product on the market. I think then my product is not innovative if I can get you that estimation, yeah, because we have to develop the market. Typically, molecular biology in medicine, it did not exist before. Very little, only in special institutes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly there was a market because there was an innovation, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it always goes that smoothly or that so well, yeah, one cannot say. But that is the idea behind, I have to say. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's also an idea when I work as a business angel. But yeah, what is a business angel? Yeah. Business angel is somebody who knows a little bit about the startup scenery. And he can tell something, he can give good advice to younger people, help with some investments, yeah, a business angel, but does not give the major investment, a smaller investment. And that is important, that then the business angel has also commercial interests. I never would negotiate that, yeah. Therefore, I said in one dinner speech, what a business angel is, an angel fallen from the heaven, because it was kicked out from the heaven, because it has, yeah, an angel does not allow to have commercial interest, but the business angel has commercial interest, and therefore it was kicked out of the heaven. But it's good enough for the earth. It's still working on the earth. My definition of a business angel. So now you know.
So I know. Can you share some investments you did as a business angel to show the potential of biotech innovation?
Yeah, that is very different. I think as a business angel or as a later investor, I got involved in very different companies. Yeah, for example, companies which were set up by colleagues of mine. Yeah, then I know best. I know the people. I know the science. That is the best situation. Yeah. There was also a company I knew that there was a very good scientist, but he was a terrible a manager, so he went bankrupt, but because his science was so good, and another investor and myself, we bought from the insolvency the company and said, and now we have to arrange it very well, and the company worked again, and it was sold after 4 years to an American company, Catalent, I think with a factor of 5 or 6 or whatever, but it stayed on the same place in Germany. And whenever I was involved in selling a company and an exit, I thought it was very important that the company stayed inside, in our case, in North Rhine-Westphalia, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And mostly it was bought by American or Indian companies, but they used it to have a foot down in Germany. And therefore the company stayed in Germany because they used the whole business inside Germany and the company stayed there. And that was, I think, and they took all the employees and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. I was only once involved in a company in Heidelberg. And they sold the asset and the company was closed down. I had no influence on that, but that can happen. It happens in many cases, but only in one case when I was involved. I have to say, yeah. It is not what I like to have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You have seen biotech startups in Germany from the mid-1980s to the mid-2020s. That is quite some time. What did you learn over time about this market?
Yeah, what did I learn? What came out from my observations, I have to say, yeah. But I think it is a little bit trivial that it is enormous, diverse. Some companies which are really flourishing, and for example, BioNTech, yeah, I followed the story of BioNTech. It's bigger than QIAGEN today. Whether it stays that way is another matter, but they really, because the epidemic is over, but the people have such a competence that they will have a very good company also in the future. Yeah, but otherwise, that was a typical company built on an epidemic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they knew from the beginning there was an epidemic and we have to go with 100% and all our activity and together with an American company, Pfizer in that time, that was important. They know how to do it. They knew how to do it, yeah. Whereas CureVac in Germany was earlier but made some mistakes, but that is not my business to judge on that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I followed companies, for example, then Evotec was more or less an outspin from QIAGEN together with Manfred Eigen from Göttingen, and then developed also very well, but had a push down in last year, which was from a personal problem, but it will recover. And then Direvo was an outspin of Evotec. I was on the board of Direvo. It was sold to Bayer on the other side of the street, I have to say, yeah. Taking over 120 employees from the company. So that was very successful. But there was also companies where we had to realize that the technology did not work as we had as we hoped that it would work.
Mm-hmm.
That we have to say, what have we do? So probably sometimes one has to close down the company. And as a stockholder or a Gesellschafter, stakeholder, we have to say we never let the company go bankrupt. We said then, we close the company, not insolvent, but how do you call it?
Liquidate.
Liquidate. We had to liquidate the company, but sometimes we, as a stockholder, had to pay the debt, to pay the debts, and then we could liquidate. But the founders did not have an insolvency. Yeah, so I think that we always found important. And therefore, then you build up a reputation, yeah? And if you build up the reputation that you invest in a company and if it doesn't work, then it is insolvent, bankrupt, that is not a good reputation. We said, if it doesn't work, we think that it has to finish in a good way for the inventors and for the startup people, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a little bit experience, very different experiences, but we had good exits, we had smaller exits, but still exits, and we had really liquidations, yeah, but which went pretty smoothly, and that is important. Yeah, people could do then other things. So that is the way I, fortunately, the successful exits were mainly we had successful exits. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it would not have been much fun. Yeah.
I see. And of course, investment should also be some fun. We are now moving a little bit into entrepreneurship and biotech. For all the entrepreneurs and researchers tuning in, what do you think is the biggest challenge when transforming from academia to business? Let us know in comments or tag somebody who might have an interesting take on this down here.
You see, in Germany, the situation today is officially much more difficult than it was in our time, because I talked already about the Arbeitnehmererfindergesetz.
Yes. Yeah?
Today, an invention you have in your institute, it belongs to the university. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
At the university, then you have to deal with the university what to do with it. And my advice is completely clear. It is simple and clear that the university gives all the know-how, all the patents to the people who have a startup, and the university gets shares in the company. That means they do not get money now, but they get probably much more money when the company is successful. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, with QIAGEN, we were not obliged to do it, but we said, okay, we were not obliged, but we took the know-how from the university. We have to give back to the university. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we gave back more than 20 millions.
Mm-hmm.
The University of Düsseldorf, yeah? And mm-hmm. the final gift was an research laboratory, which was newly built. And I think we had our own Arbeitnehmererfindergesetz, but completely free, and it worked much better than the official Arbeitnehmererfindergesetz. And today I'm really fighting for it, mm-hmm. that the university, or even more critical are the governmental research institutes like Helmholtz, Fraunhofer. They think they have to earn money when there's a startup, to have to get money from the people who have the startup, even they don't have money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of say, okay, we have shares, and if the company gets successful, then we earn the money. I think it's called the Darmstädter Modell, but we had it in Düsseldorf already, I think, 12 years ago, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you could call it something like IP for equity.
Right. You can call it right that way. IP for equity, but that is important. The equity is equity without voting rights.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have the vote in university, which probably can vote for a company's decision, that is terrible. Yeah. Equity without voting rights, because the university does not know how to vote there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They might have specialists, but normally not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, and that is something we did now with Priavoid. But long discussions with the research center in Jülich, with Düsseldorf, it was much easier. Yeah, normally it's easier with the universities than with the governmental research institutes. Also, they are really obliged to support startups, but what they are doing, they hinder it. And I hope they will learn in the near future.
They basically have to learn. I had a few questions in this section of the interview, but basically you already went through all the answers that I would have asked from you. So let's go into another short ad break, and then we get onto your decision retiring from active roles. As the head of the supervisory board of QIAGEN, how did you ensure a smooth transition of leadership when stepping back from your role?
Yeah, I think that is important, because QIAGEN is a technology company, and I think I felt always pretty well as a chairman of the board because I knew the technology. But I did not know all the finances. And when I had question on the finances, which the CEO, probably I thought the CEO has another opinion than I feel, then I asked my colleague in the board about that problem, who knew mm-hmm. about the finances. exactly when I had question about selling, what type of selling have we to support me? There was a guy who was a specialist in selling. So as a chairman of the supervisory board, you have a lot of obligation and responsibility, and you cannot answer it always by yourself. You have again to work as a team. That is the point, yeah? And if you think you have to answer everything yourself, you make too many mistakes. Of course, I had very close connection to the CEO of the company. Met every week or so, yeah? And before the board meetings, we met very intensively and discussed all the questions. But that does not mean that I did not depend upon the specialists in the board on special questions.
I think bottom line is always ask the specialist if you know them.
Yeah. And you have to have a board with specialists. Even you can ask other people, but the specialists have to be in the board because they know the company otherwise.
I was wondering, there was a time when you retired from the Kiagen board and you retired from your position at the university. How did your focus shift since? And what interests did you develop? How did your life change in that time? Do you have any recommendations?
Yeah. My recommendation is stay active. Yeah, I said always, of course, I earned a lot of money. Everybody knows that. And I could have stayed in probably in Mallorca and put my belly in the sun. Yeah. But I said always, I felt so sorry for the sun to look at that. Yeah. Therefore, I could not do it. That is reason. So, but more seriously, I could put more time and effort in the other companies where I was involved. And for example, even in the companies, now the successor of my chair, Dieter Wilbold, and they took over the mentality, when you have a good idea, set up a company. And he did very good science in Alzheimer. And Alzheimer is now a scientific development from the prions, yeah, so further development for the prions. So we had a lot of scientific contact. And when he started the company, I helped him as much as I can. I gave him the first money, and I solved the problem with the wrong CEO they had in the company, and we bought the patents from the research institute, that the patents have to belong to the company, otherwise you don't get money. Yeah. So I got very much involved in that. And then I got involved, similar to that, in a diagnostic company for Alzheimer and other neurodegenerative diseases. And and there were other sites. So I really was a little bit, I was asking, of course, a lot to would like to be with our company. I said, only that I have to learn, only the company where I understand the science 100%. Yeah. I was asked, oh, you see, we have a very good company for cancer. I think I believe it too, that you have a good company for cancer, but I don't understand sufficient from cancer. Therefore, I will not go into your company. And so on. That is my involvement. Actually, I'm now in Tübingen involved in a cancer company, but they could explain that very well to me, and they had funds from the other side. And the funding agency, do you know the Sprint agency?
Yeah. Sprint? Yeah. It's a governmental agency.
Yeah, and Sprint is... gives a lot of money to the Priavoid, that is a company of my successor, Dieter Wilbold. And now he's in phase two with Alzheimer, with a very good compound for Alzheimer. And then they said, okay, we will also give money to the Tübingen company, but they need a little bit the experience, the strategic experience in a startup. Would you not like to be involved a little bit in that? And I met to the people and I said, these people are okay. That is interesting to work with them. Yeah. Also, it's not really my field, but if the people are good enough, I can trust them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is, so I made the change from chair of QIAGEN, chair of biophysics, but I still have my office in the university. And I was even in the board of trustees of the university. This were running all, also. So I'm going back from official obligations to more informal interests and obligations in smaller companies and try if their company has an exit, fine. And I have not replaced every exit with a new company, yeah? So I will use that.
Let us go into the last section, the last three questions, your current perspective and future outlook. How do you see the role of artificial intelligence and machine learning in biotech research and development?
Yeah, we did that before we knew about the name. We, or better, the colleagues with whom I worked, of course, in the 70s, there were the best programs with the best data to calculate structure of proteins. Mm-hmm. In the same way, we used the best programs and a lot of data to calculate the structure of RNA folding and refolding during the biological activity. Yeah, that was, of course, KI at that time. But in the meantime, the machines got 100 times faster. The data extended by a factor of 100. And then we call it AI,
artificial intelligence, yeah. Yes.
So the artificial intelligence was already there, but now it has much more impact because the machines are better, the data are much extended, and so new relationships can be found by artificial intelligence, yeah, which could not be found before because it would have taken years. Therefore, in my mind, artificial intelligence is not something very new. It is in systematic development from earlier intentions. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And of course, we use it in everything where structure or metabolic pathways and those things, complicated things, have to be described.
They are especially good if it goes really, really complex.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on interdisciplinary collaboration in driving innovations?
Yeah, I always have to go back to QIAGEN. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was a physicist. My co-workers were, one was a chemist, the other one was a microbiologist, and the third one was a biochemist. So, and the four of us, every with a different field, collaborated and set up QIAGEN. And we had to complement each other by our knowledge, yeah? Mm-hmm. As a physicist, I have to go, of course, very often to the biochemist and have to ask him what happens here, what happens there, or to the microbiologist and chemist, yeah? So interdisciplinary collaboration is very important. So I don't know what we would have done without it. It was our experience, yeah. Okay, that's all I can say.
Yes, and the last question, I think you already talked a lot about what you continue to influence the biotech sector. What are your current projects or initiatives, and what legacy do you hope to leave for future generations of scientists and entrepreneurs?
Yeah, that is, of course, a question. For example, the legacy, the European legacy for plant molecular biology was terrible. Yeah. Genetically engineered plants were more or less forbidden in Europe. Unfortunately, this is now liberated. Yeah. But that is one point, that the legacy has to be quite liberal. Yeah. It has to be watched whether there are dangers can appear. But for example, why went, that is my, I did not speak to the people, but this is my suspicion. Why went BioNTech with research to Britain? Yeah. Because the legacy is more liberal. The admissions, the legal authority works faster. And I think the fiscal improvement, the fiscal support is better. Yeah. And these are three points which Germany, it one we have to work on in Germany, that it gets better and that a company has not to go with particular parts of the company to Britain. Also, QIAGEN has a research laboratory in Britain, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Completely clear. I think there are still is still a lot of do and how, because we discussed it earlier, I know how for shares or IP for shares, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This system has really to be fixed for universities and governmental institutes, yeah. And I think the Sprint is working on that, and the, there is a Darmstädter Modell who proposed that. This is the right direction. But it is not clear in all heads of these institutes, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And for, in the heads might be, but in the lower parts of the administration, that is hard to see. And for example, there is one problem, what we call in Germany, the Neid Faktor. You know what the Neid Faktor is?
Yeah, jealousy factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are really people who are suspicious, oh, they will earn a lot of money and take this money here from our university. That is not the case. They have to work like hell for it, yeah. And they will really improve the university when they are successful, the reputation of the university, and give better chances to more younger people, yeah. And therefore, this has to be in the mind of the administration of these people, to help and not to ask money from people who don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened in the past.
That are actually very good closing words. We've covered a lot of ground today, but I know there's always more to explore. What's your biggest takeaway from today's conversation? Share your insights with us. Let us know. Keep the discussion going down here in the show notes. Professor Riesner, thank you very much for taking so much time answering all my questions. It was a pleasure having you as a guest.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed also this discussion, I have to say. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.